Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to the Heroes Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, welcome to Gamer Heroes, episode 60. I am Derek, one of your regular hosts, kind of, for a bit. And I got my buddy John with me.
Hey.
How's it going, man?
It's good to be back.
Yeah.
This is 60. This is it. This is the episode we've talked about. We've hyped up the past couple episodes.
We have mentioned that changes were coming to Gamer Heroes on episode 60, and so you've made it that far. So we are actually, John and I, are going to be stepping away from Gamer Heroes and turning it over to a lovely group of guys who are from GGKC, and I've got half of them here, two of the four. I've got John and Mike, and I want to give you guys a chance to introduce yourselves.
Yeah, hello. Confusingly, also John.
I was just going to say, we have to come up with code names. So, I'll clearly be Johnny Five. Yeah. That's what I always
That's
go
a good
by.
Code name.
Disassemble.
That is what I go by.
We picked another John, just so that there's not too much change for the listeners. So like Derek said, we're from a group called GGKC. We promote competitive gaming events here in Kansas City, and Derek and John offered to hand off this podcast to us, and we're really excited to get started.
Yep, and I am Mike. A couple of guys that couldn't make it today because I got them sick last week are Josh and Thomas, so they'll be joining us. I don't know if all four of us will be on every episode, but we're going to try to keep it to at least like three people on each one. We are focused on kind of the KC, the local KC stuff, but we want to try to keep this podcast open for everybody. So we know that there's already a lot of people that listen to this podcast, and we're going to try to keep our talk about like the local scene to a minimum at the end of the episode to let you guys know what's going on around here. But we're going to try to keep it relevant for everybody else that may not be in the KC area. So probably just like what you're used to listening to, just with some new people.
So what you're saying is the same, but different.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'm really excited about it. You know, John and I have been doing this one now, you know, 60 episodes, a year and a half.
I was going to say over a year.
You know, and we had a couple of hosts join us and leave and all of that.
If
so
you were there for that.
You go all the way back to the beginning. But yeah, I mean, basically, John and I just unfortunately haven't been able to game as much as we want to. And it's hard to talk about games when you're not playing them, I find.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. You know, you do what makes you happy, and we want to play, and we want to play together. So it's hard to do that when you have to do a podcast as well. So now we have reasons. We have free time, so we have to play now. Like we cannot lie to these listeners here.
Fair enough. It does mean I have a new video game podcast to listen to, because I don't listen to myself.
Yeah.
I do that.
Why would you? That'd be weird.
Yeah. But I'll listen to you guys.
I was going to say, now you have to listen here.
So this episode is going to take kind of our normal format that you guys are used to, but obviously John and Mike, Josh and Thomas will be able to throw their own spin on it and change things, you know, however it flows for them, you know.
Yeah.
So.
And stay tuned to the end. One thing we'll be adding is every week we will be doing a question for our listeners and asking you to respond to us via social media. So I've got the question ready. And
now you have
tuned
to say it. Yeah. I feel like you have to start with the question.
Yeah, you
gotta
wait till the end. Stick
around. It's generally going to be pretty fun. And then on the next episode, we'll pick the best responses and read them on the podcast.
Nice.
Sounds
nice.
Like fun.
It's
I
a
like
good
that.
Stinger. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess we can start then with gaming news, which is what we normally talk about first. And there's just a ton of stuff to talk about. I guess if we want to start alphabetically, we could start with Amazon and the changes to its pre-order structure. So I can take this one if you guys don't want to.
We can talk the whole time just about this. It's bullshit. I'm just going to go ahead and jump out there. Johnny Five speaking. It's bullshit. It's real for me as a person who pays for Prime, who's used Prime a lot. I feel like you're punishing me. And this was the reason I used you to begin with, because I was getting a discount because Best Buy is gone. Who else am I going to get a pre-order discount from? And now Best Buy is gone. You decide to follow suit. And now there's no discounts at all.
Yeah, and with Best Buy being gone, how convenient.
Right.
Yeah.
As soon as I saw Best, because I'm a Gamer Club Unlocked member at Best Buy too. And as soon as I got that message, it's like, yeah, once yours is done, you're done forever.
Yeah.
It's like, well, Amazon's is going to change, I imagine. But this is pretty rough. So if you don't know, anybody out there who doesn't know, if you're an Amazon Prime member, until recently, if you pre-ordered a video game, you got 20% off, with a few exclusions like big physical collector's editions that came with statues and stuff like that. They changed the policy a few weeks ago to exclude remakes and remasters, even though Resident Evil 2, for some reason, did not count, but Spyro did. I don't know.
I have no idea why. Because they're both, like, if you want to argue one's a remaster, one's a completely different game, they're both actually redone completely different, so I don't know why Spyro
it's confusing.
Didn't meet the...
Re-releases don't count either, so Diablo 3 on Switch doesn't count. You can't do that. Dark Souls remaster doesn't count. But anyway, the new policy is basically no pre-order discount. You'll get $10 in Amazon credit within 60 days of the game actually going on sale if you actually go through with the pre-order. And then you have 90 days to spend that credit.
I don't remember. I'm not going to remember any of those things.
Wait, so is it Amazon credit as in you can only spend it on things like Amazon Video?
It's an Amazon credit in that you can only spend it on things that Amazon actually sells directly. Gotcha. So if it's fulfilled by Amazon, that does not count.
So, okay. I mean, that's useful, but it's not nearly as good.
It goes away if you don't use it. Right. 90 days.
Yeah, 90 days.
Yeah.
That's the part that I'm like, so it's a limited credit for 90 days?
I think what they expect you to do is just turn that around and use it to pre-order again.
Another game, yeah. I think you're absolutely right.
Another one to pre-order every 90 days.
Yeah. Okay, well, apparently. That's a floating invisible $10.
Yeah. Right, you just pass it on from game to game. And it's only going to be certain games. It's not even all games. And like I said, it has to be something that is sold by Amazon, not fulfilled by Amazon. Mm-hmm. So just because it says Prime doesn't mean that it'll count. So it's pretty disappointing because, you know, I pre-order lots of games that I'm on the fence about just to get that discount and then usually forget to cancel and end up paying for it. So I actually went in and I pre-ordered, I think, 10 games before this ends on the tomorrow. Because it ends tomorrow.
Oh, God. Right,
I need to get
tomorrow.
Smash Brothers.
Do it.
Well, so
do
we're
it.
Recording this on Monday, so that means it actually ended yesterday for anybody who's listening to this.
Oh, yeah.
The day the episode comes out.
Launch day.
Sorry. Sorry for you guys out there. But I got my pre-orders
in. I'm the type of person that has never really been big on pre-ordering. I definitely get, Best Buy had a good incentive for a while, and Amazon, did until very recently. But even so, I have always just been super cautious and wanted to wait until the game came out, get some reviews in, and then wait to see how it does.
I think logically I should be against pre-orders, and I know there's everything in the world telling me I shouldn't pre-order, but there are some games that I just get excited for, Like, even if it's something that isn't necessarily a franchise game that I know I'm gonna like, but just something that's new, like, a great example is Octopath Traveler. I got so excited about that game. And I had to pre-order it. I thought it was it was beautiful. It looked like it did the things that I wanted to do. And, with how those story arcs go, it just didn't really pan out the way that I wanted it to. But
that's fair.
I mean, every once in a while, I run into those snags. But I feel like more times than not when I pre-order, I'm happy with it.
It's a known quantity for you.
Yeah. Well, let's say like Smash Brothers, right? Yeah. Like I know we'll be, I'm getting that game.
That's a given.
So I might as well get the 20% off, right? Mm-hmm. But then there's other games out there that I'm on the fence about, like Cyberpunk, right? We know very little about it. We don't even know when it's coming out yet. But it does seem interesting, and it might be worth checking out. Or, you know, the new Tomb Raider, right? Shadow of the Tomb Raider.
That's going
to
be good.
I know I will want to play it. I don't know when I'll get around to it, right? So I didn't do it. I did not pre-order that one because I thought it would be, by the time I get around to it, it'll be discounted.
Yeah.
Right? Because these games go on sale.
Everyone's backlogged. I don't know about you guys, but we're backlogged.
Absolutely.
And I keep adding, even though I should be subtracting.
Yeah, no, that is a really good point. I think I look at pre-orders like I have all the time in the world, and I'm going to be able to actually sit down and rip it open and play it as much as I want right when I get it, and that never, ever, ever happens. So
I try to be responsible and only buy games I think I'm going to play. Not to say I haven't bought games and then not played them.
Because but now you have a pile of games you think you're going to play. It's like, for me, though, as a Switch owner, Switch is now getting all the games I loved playing on PS4 and Xbox. And so this is why this particular subject sucks. Because I'm going to buy those again. Like, you want to buy Diablo again, right, Derek?
Well, I did, until I found out it was $59.99 with no pre-order discount.
I thought that was ridiculous.
Yep.
I think I know why. Now, this is totally unfounded, but...
It's Blizzard.
So the cards, the memory cards, this part's true, but the cartridges for the Switch cost more depending on how much memory is on
it. Is this the one that'll break the pattern?
I'm wondering if this is the first one to use a 64 gig card.
I thought Doom Eternal would have been the first one.
Well, that game's not out yet.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
I think this one might be the first one that pushed the envelope for a 64 gig card.
So we've been talking about this for like 5 podcasts that Nintendo has yet to use a 64 gigabyte cartridge.
Mm.
And we thought Doom would have been the first game to do that. But it didn't. It came out on the regular 32, right?
Because it also had a 9.5 gig download.
Right. That's how you get around it.
Diablo does not have any download. The entire game is on the cartridge.
Hmm.
That's amazing.
So that makes me think that it probably broke the 32 gigabyte threshold. It may not be 64, right? But if it hit 40, you have to have that larger card.
Right.
And so even though the Eternal Edition or whatever they're calling it is $39.99 on PS4 and Xbox One, it's $59.99 on Switch.
Oh.
And I've already bought Diablo twice.
Yes, same.
Right?
PC and Xbox.
PC and PS4. Yeah. And it's like, buying it a third time was already kind of like irresponsible.
And I didn't play it enough the second time. I didn't play it enough the first time to make it worth it.
Yeah.
And I definitely didn't play it enough the second time to make it worth it, even though I played it more than on PC.
I played the hell out of it on PC. And then I was looking at it on Xbox, and I was like, man, you know what? I think my wife would really like this game.
The co-op is so fun.
Yeah,
couch co-op on Diablo.
That's why I bought it a second time, because I had been playing it on PC for years. Ray wanted to play it together. I'm like, well, there's a justification.
Right.
I'm buying that experience. What's my excuse for Switch?
On the go,
all the Diablo.
Hop in on the airplane.
Who doesn't want to play Diablo while driving?
You know, I'm surprised there has not been a wreck caused by that yet.
I need the loot.
Fantastic.
Maybe there hasn't been a game for that.
So we got it, and I sat down with Kelly, and she hated it.
Oh, what?
So
she hated it?
What did she like about it?
That was the first time she'd played like a top-down game, kind of like
isometric,
that. She just wasn't crazy
Surely
about
she
it,
understands so. Why, though. There's so many damn enemies on the screen at one point.
I do have a big gripe for the local co-op, though, for Diablo 3, and that's inventory is one person at a time.
Mm,
and later in the game, when you start maxing out your inventory and it takes your gear really matters.
Well, it takes a while, too.
Yeah, like we would take turns, like, all right, it's my turn, and then someone would go leave for 20 minutes and go do something else.
You were talking about a game that did that well. It was like 9 Parchments,
Parchments on Switch.
Yeah.
Only $19.99. It's basically a Diablo clone.
He sells this game.
It's such a good game. It is such a good game. Look, for $20, it's gorgeous, and it's really good. It's got replayability. It's a little Diablo, if you don't want to spend triple the price.
I don't.
You know?
I mean, that sounds intriguing to me.
I think it's amazing that they figured out how to charge so much for it every single time.
Yeah.
And people keep buying it.
Yeah.
You know? But the cartridge thing is becoming an issue. Like, Overcooked 2 was $24.99 on the eShop or $39.99 in physical.
Wow.
And so I went with the eShop. That's too much of a difference.
Dead Cells was more expensive on the physical copy for Switch.
And it makes sense, but at the same time, it's like they're almost stiff-arming you to go the digital route. But then you use up your memory, your internal memory.
Yeah, there's so much space on it anyway.
You have to expand. So it's like a weird cycle that they're playing here.
To me, this is sort of the reverse of what we've been... This is the reality of we've been expecting discounts for digital games because they don't have to manufacture anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So now we're seeing the physical games just be more expensive.
Right. Yeah, they just bump those up.
Yeah. They're like, okay, well, fine. We'll make them cheaper by making the others worse.
Yes.
At least Nintendo shrouds it in this explanation of, well, the cartridges cost more depending on. It
costs us 50 cents more cartridges.
This is when Nintendo is going to come out with like their $200 Ultra SD card or something.
There is an officially licensed one that definitely costs a lot more than the one I bought. So.
It is SanDisk as well, right?
I'm pretty sure
it was a SanDisk.
It probably is.
It was up there. It was like close to... It could take up to expandable 1 terabyte, right? There was a 1 terabyte card out there. I was like, what?
That exists?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not paying for it.
No, that's not that. It was like $200 card. Yeah, it was up there.
Yeah. I need
storage.
Get all the downloadable games you want.
I'm gonna put all my family files on this.
It's crazy.
Oh man. All right. So that's I guess enough on the Amazon thing. What else we have going on, guys?
Well, I think we should definitely take a moment of silence to pay some respects to the people that got injured and killed at the Madden 19 shooting this past week.
Right. So for people who don't know, this happened, I guess, yesterday, Sunday, right? In Jacksonville, Florida, there was a Madden 19 tournament, and allegedly one of the players was unhappy and decided to pull out a gun and start shooting some people. Latest reports I saw were that 3 were dead, including the shooter, and 11 were injured. I heard some audio from it because a lot of people at this convention, of course, or event were streaming on Twitch, as you do. And there's definitely some stuff out there from like the live shooting. And I heard the audio from that.
I heard it and I didn't even really want to. It was sort of an accident. And it is very shocking and upsetting. So don't go searching for it unless you really are ready.
Yeah, I remember when I saw it pop up on Reddit, I clicked what I thought was the article, and it was a direct link to the audio. Mm-hmm. And the website had actually gotten kind of the Reddit like hug of death, so I went into the comments, and that's where I saw that it linked to the audio. And I was like, man, I'm glad that site was down, because I don't think I would have...
Right.
That's a little too traumatic for me. I don't recover from those kind of videos very well.
It was not good. The only reason I heard it is because they played it on the Buzz, 96.5 The Buzz.
Seriously?
What a terrible
place
today,
to play that.
On the Church of Laszlo. And so they played a short clip of it. I'm sure it wasn't the whole thing. But I wasn't like looking for it necessarily, but we were covering news. And it's news. So.
Yeah, it's obviously a very upsetting thing to happen. And it's spawned a lot of conversation about... just things all the way ranging from the violence and gun control to how gamers handle themselves and handle strangers and gaming, competitive gaming situations, to things like security at gaming events.
That's that's where I was going first in my head.
It's spun a lot of conversations.
Yeah, never would have really thought about security at tournaments.
As a group that hosts, local gaming events, I guess I'm a little ashamed to say that never really even crossed my mind.
Mm-hmm.
No, I mean, it occurred to me that people would try and cheat, right?
Yeah.
Right, but it never occurred to me that somebody would take it to that level and try and actually like kill people over, in this case, a Madden game. I mean, I've been playing Madden football games most of my life. My little brother had an aggressive streak and would throw the controller across the room, but that's about as bad as it got. So, this is, it's not good. It doesn't make anybody look good.
No.
This is bad for the whole community. So, and obviously the people who were injured and killed is even worse for them. So,
there is if anybody's interested, or wants to try and support the was it a bar or just a gaming club?
It's a bar. It's good luck have fun. GLHF,
Good luck have fun gaming. There is a if you're into this kind of thing, a GoFundMe to help with support for victims. I think the organization itself, things like that. So if you are so inclined, that is available out there.
Yeah, we found it earlier today, and it looks like it was started up by a friend and patron of the bar, it said. So if you're looking for it, you can find it with hashtag GamersGiveBackGLHF.
All right. Well, on to happier things, hopefully, and best to all the people who are, you know, still fighting it out. All right. So in other news, Microsoft announced something kind of interesting that there had been rumblings about. I was actually surprised it was real. And that is the new Xbox One All Access Pass, which I know, which ties into Game Pass. I know, John, you have a lot of opinions about that.
Yeah. I mean, I've loved Game Pass.
You've loved it?
Oh, I've loved
it. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
As a Xbox owner, and I love that all of the, supposedly all of the first party Microsoft games are going to be coming out, Play Anywhere on Game Pass. So I picked it up when Sea of Thieves came out. Loved that. Feel like I got my money's worth. And as games have come out, I've tried stuff I wouldn't normally buy. Right now I'm playing Hitman, which I know was really popular when it came out. I just never picked it up. Thomas, one of the other guys on in this group, recommended it, and I've been playing it. It's great.
I actually have questions for you. Okay. So how are you, as someone who owns it now and does, like we were just talking earlier, has a backlog of games, how are you finding it that are you completing these games in this time before it expires?
Nah, no. I mean, I'm also not a completionist in general.
Gotcha.
I'm the type of person who wants to try a bunch of stuff, right? Just to get the experience and say, I played it, and then I'll get halfway through most things and put it down.
Gotcha.
There's some games I'll play, you know, most story-driven campaign games, things like BioShock, I'll finish those, right? But I'm also not going to generally go replay it a bunch of times.
I mean, plus a lot of games nowadays just require so much time for you to finish it.
Yep.
So it's, I mean, some games are just hard to finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just the campaign guy. I don't 100% anything, but I do want to finish whatever the main story is, right? I've been looking at Game Pass. I don't know. I worry that I'll be in the middle of a game and then they won't have it the next month. Yep. And I won't be able to play it anymore.
And that's my major concern. Like, BioShock is a pretty long game. And I feel like, do you ever feel rushed? Maybe not for you particularly, but my concern is I will be rushed. And I'm like, oh, I gotta beat this game before the time is up.
So far, I have not run into anything giving me trouble with the amount of time it's available. I mean, it's months usually.
Does it show you when it's no longer available? Does it say?
It gives you a warning at like 30 days out or something.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Okay.
It'll basically like next month this one's going to expire.
Right.
Or whatever.
I mean, I feel like if I'm playing a game that long, I'm going to end up turning around and buying it anyway.
Well, there's that. Plus, let's say you have it on Game Pass. You play a bunch of it and you finish it. But you're worried about it disappearing from Game Pass because maybe you want to go play it later.
Yeah.
Well, you're going to have that option to pick up the cheap used version later if you really like it that much. You know? This gives you the 80%. The time, you know, the 20%, you might lose out on some stuff.
Yeah, you could almost look at it as like a more complete, you can demo any game.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it. And then you do get a bunch of old games that are going to be on there for a long time.
It's a good way of looking at it, because there are certainly games that I'm curious about but don't want to drop $60 on, right? Because I'm only going to get 20 back, you know, or something like that. So that is kind of interesting.
Do you find and I'll stop after that. Do you find that there are games in the library that you're not interested in, and that consist the whole library as a whole is like there's like three games I'm into.
There's definitely an aspect of there's some premier games that rotate.
Right.
There's like top three or five spots are the real good stuff.
Always.
And then there's some junk. You know, there's a lot of junk. 20 or 30 games that I'm just never gonna try. But that said, there's a lot of in between, I think. And what I find happening is I'll just hear about a game that I didn't know existed, you know, that came out a year ago. And then I happen to find out, oh, that's on
Game Pass.
And so I go and try it. And it's not like I would go out and buy that game normally, you know?
Oh, yeah.
The one that I missed a year ago, I'm like, nah, I'm just not going to pick it up.
You weren't interested then.
Yeah.
Why would you be interested now?
So it's really more, there's the premium games, those are great, but the ones in the middle are where I'm finding I get the most value. I get to try more stuff, which is exactly what I want to do.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a great side, a perspective of it that we didn't have because we don't partake in the Game Pass.
I did the trial of it, and I remember I felt like my problem was just that I have too many consoles. Like, I have my PS4 and my Switch on my main TV in the living room. We have our Wii U is like our Netflix machine in the bedroom. Mm-hmm. And then I have my Xbox on a TV upstairs. And the Xbox we take to a lot of events around town. And I find that, like, I'll take the Xbox to an event, and then I won't hook it back up until we take it to another event.
Yep.
So then I'm like, I just don't know if I'm going to use it if I have it. But then maybe I would if there were more games available.
Well, for example, Overcooked.
Yeah.
Right? Great game. So it was good. Really hyped when it first came out. I never played it. I saw it. I was like, oh, that looks fun, but I never picked it up. Came out on Game Pass. We started playing it.
Mm-hmm.
Great few evenings just screwing around in that game. It's a lot of fun. But, you know, and I'm sure we'll go back to it. But I probably would never have bought it if it weren't for the service.
That's fair. Sequel's amazing.
Yeah, I've heard.
So good.
Mostly the same, but polished, added a little bit.
It's more hectic.
Really?
They got much more creative with their level design in the sequel. But so for this all-access thing, and I have the same problem, Mike, that you have. So in our living room, I've got all three of the current-gen consoles. In my office, I have basically all of my old consoles. And I buy games depending on, like, what it is. It's all very specific, right? And my hierarchy starts with Switch now. Mm-hmm. If it doesn't come out on Switch, then I look at something else. Right.
Yeah.
That's just how I do it now. Xbox All Access, basically, based on Microsoft's information on their website, there's two versions of it. And what this does is it gets you a console, which is the big thing here, right? So there's an Xbox One X version and an S version. The X one is $34.99 a month. The S one is $21.99 a month. It gets you, that's for two years, 24 months. You get the console, you get to keep it like a phone. You get Game Pass and Xbox Live Gold during that whole time. There's no additional upfront costs or anything like that. You basically just have to pass like a basic credit check for financing, and you can get it. It does say you have to do it in store, in a Microsoft store, which does limit people a bit because they're not everywhere.
Everywhere.
So not exactly. Best Buy.
Not Best Buy. Okay. At least based on this, right, when you click find, it says in-store only. When you click find a store, it's just Microsoft stores.
So this is the most interesting thing to me, because now it's almost like they're capturing another market of, they're trying to take more from like other places that do rentals. So this is like a really advanced rental thing. I don't like the Microsoft store aspect of it.
It's lease to own, you know. It is.
Yeah. And it's really interesting because like nobody's ever done that really with hardware.
Well, it's sort of the cell phone model, mm-hmm. I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's exactly what it is.
Yeah, I have a lot of conflicting feelings about it, but in general, they're not taking away the ability to just go buy the console.
No,
right. So, if that's the case, they're just providing another option, and as long as it doesn't become something that ties people's hands, I'm for it.
Yeah, I'm on the fence about it, because like on one aspect I do think that it's kind of an interesting idea and could get more people in on the games, but on the other hand, it kind of just seems like Xbox Gold's gym, you know, like you're getting some gym membership that you're like locked into for a certain period.
That's
of time.
A gym that I can really get involved with.
Yeah. Oh, worst
weight machines. It'd be good for like my brother. Like my brother is. He is very inconsistent with his gaming, so he'll buy a PS4, play the games he wants to play, sell his PS4, and when another game comes out and he wants to play, I don't know why he does this, he'll buy it again.
Yeah. Jeez.
So for him, this would make a lot of sense.
Well, you got to pay for it for 2 years, you know, to pay it off. Now, I will say this, you do save a little bit of money. Not a ton, necessarily. It depends what you do. So Polygon did the math for us, and if you do the Xbox One X version, you'll save about $20 over those 2 years. But the S version, you'll save over $130, which that's interesting. And I mean, I have an S. I think it's wonderful. I think it was a big upgrade from the launch edition. So if you don't have a full 4K setup, I think it's a great choice. But I don't know. I mean, financing does allow people who don't have, you know, $500-$600 to drop right now, get something like that, which is kind of cool.
That is interesting. I'm excited to see where that goes.
I almost wonder if part of the reason for it is just they came out with this console that's so expensive that they can't sell. And now they're like...
The One X?
Yeah. It's like maybe...
Well, because who is it for, right? Yeah. Like, this is a conversation like we've all had, yeah. You know, like, who is that console really meant mm-hmm. for?
It's just another stepping stone.
Yeah, it's
just
like...
to say they had another refresh. Exactly.
It's like they're trying to pull PC players in, but the PC players aren't going to leave, you know?
Why would they? Well, they have okay. no reason to.
Yeah. Hold on, though. I am someone who does want the gaming ecosystem, and I would buy into, if Microsoft could get a lot more games on Play Anywhere, where I could right. buy it, subscribe to the service, play it on PC when I want, play it on Xbox when I want. I'm a big fan of that idea. And I think they have enough leverage that they can continue pushing that.
I agree. If they had more games with play it anywhere, yeah. I would definitely jump back over to Xbox. Just because, I mean, are you telling me I don't have to pay twice for a game? Exactly. Like, that's amazing.
Exactly. And it at some point, if they can be successful enough with it, it really will make the Microsoft Store compete with Steam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, with how much fun we had with Sea of Thieves. I mean, when it released, there's like barely any content
yeah,
there.
But it was still fun.
But it was fun because you could play with everybody and it was never a problem. You never had to like coordinate with your friends what games you were allowed to play. Yeah. You know?
It's an interesting conversation. I get that they want to pull some more of the PC market, but even if that was the goal, right? And you look at the S and you look at the X... And the X is literally double the price, sometimes even more, because the S goes on sale for $199 a right. lot and gets bundled with games a lot. So what are you getting for double the cost? I don't care what your favorite platform is, right?
It's what
is
that? Requires.
What is that difference, right? If you don't have a 4K TV...
That's where I'm at.
Right? And then it's totally irrelevant. And even if you do have a 4K TV, you're still locked by frame rate for any game that has online multiplayer. Because you can't have Destiny 2 people playing at 60 frames per second against 30 frames per second.
Exactly. Yeah. You know? So that was a big misconception for a lot of people who bought the Xbox One X. They thought that games were going to be produced for that machine. And it's like, no, we're just porting them over.
They're just enhanced graphics-wise. And they're beautiful.
Sure, sure.
You know? But
there will never hit those numbers. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? The numbers, the potential of this box never gets reached. Ever.
No.
Not with the modern stuff. And if your thing is you want a 4K Blu-ray player, well, the S has that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? So if I got a 4K TV, I have 4K discs now that play on that.
Why did I spend double?
Right. Exactly.
I mean, I assume that Microsoft, for their first-party games, will leverage the hardware. But... that remains to be seen too. It's like Crackdown 3 or whatever, whenever. If it
ever
releases,
yeah.
Everyone keeps putting their eggs in that basket.
That is the basket. It is.
Sure, you got Terry Crews. That'll bring me in.
You're right though. Crackdown 3 or Gears 5 or Halo 6. Like one of those games has to be the one to push this over the edge, right? Yeah. Because that's what's winning. That's why PlayStation's winning. They have Horizon Zero Dawn and The Last of Us.
We talked that Halo will be on the next system.
Well, see, that's the problem, though, is like, is there really going to be another generation, or is it just more iterations at this point? Because the differences...
all out of iterations. They've done four since release. I think we're done.
I want to know what they'd name it anyway. They're going to run out of letters at some point.
It's the Xbox One X2.
Oh, God.
X360.
Yeah, seriously.
But, I mean, you know, they have talked a bit about it being some type of modular thing. Again, they want to bring those PC gamers into it, right? And I appreciate, don't get me wrong, I think that's a cool idea. But I think most of your console purchasers like the fact that it's plug and play.
Yeah.
Right? And I love building my own PC. I'm not sure that I want that overhead built into my television entertainment system. I have that in my office, and that's fine. Right, but I like the Xbox. I can sit down and just play whenever. I don't have to worry about adjusting anything or swapping out components. So
that's generally how I feel.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, they're going to be able to put a premium price on any component.
It's going to end up being a more expensive PC.
Yeah, exactly. Because
it's going to have to work specifically for the Xbox One, right? So it's not going to be go to Micro Center and have a wall of graphics cards, right?
they're going to have proprietary components that you have to like crawl on your knees to them to buy.
Like the hard drives for the 360, right? Mm-hmm. Remember how expensive those were compared to like a normal hard drive?
It was more than the console at some points, and you're like...
crazy.
Yeah. Why did I just go buy a new console?
Yep. Now, the company that has taken proprietary hardware to the extreme is definitely Nintendo.
They want to be Nintendo.
What are you talking about?
$80 for two
Joy-Con? Yeah. People are buying it. What do you care?
No. That's the problem, right? Like, I look at a Switch Pro controller, and I see that it's $70. And I look at an Xbox One controller, I see it's $60. And my brain goes... No, the Nintendo one's fine.
Well, even just holding the $80 Joy-Con box in your hand is like, this is wrong. All the way through the checkout. This is wrong. All right, I guess I'm going home with it.
Oh, they better be made out of gold.
Oh, man. But it's true, though.
It's,
Nintendo...
it's an HD Rumble. It's the HD Rumble. You can hear ice cubes. You can feel ice cubes.
That HD Rumble is ridiculous, by the way. But no, there is something about Nintendo. Nintendo is such like a black box in the way that it develops stuff. I think because Microsoft is losing so badly to Sony that maybe they see what Nintendo's doing. Like, well, maybe we can do that.
Yeah.
But I don't think, I'm not sure anyone would ever look at Microsoft that way.
They've come out, they've thought out of the box a couple times with the new accessibility controller.
That thing's pretty sweet.
That one's quite genius.
Yeah.
This going, taking the cell phone cue. Obviously, Sony has made $1 billion on PSVR already. Did you hear that? They sold 3 million units. It's $1 billion. Yeah. Just last month. So that's a $1 billion market they've already captured in 2 years. So,
and Microsoft literally has nothing for VR. So,
and that's kind of one of those things. Where else do we go? So I think they've been forced to be very creative. So,
well, they did just buy like 4 or 5 studios. So yeah. That'll help.
That's a good move.
Yeah.
And
exclusive content.
The rumor has always been that Microsoft is really making the long play with VR. What's it called? Their glasses.
The HoloLens?
Yes. I mean, they've invested a ton in that. And I think the idea being that it's going to be for, you know, so far outside of gaming and its scope, it'll be available for that, you know, but it's going to be
consumer cost.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, people want to compare Microsoft, Sony, and Nintendo, but the problem is that Microsoft is not only a consumer company.
Yeah.
Sony and Nintendo basically are consumer-only companies, right? And Sony has their movie company, too, that makes them a little bit different. Nintendo's the only dedicated one. But Microsoft, most of their industry is industrial-type stuff, you know? And HoloLens, like, the ad keeps showing up on my Facebook feed, and it's like $3,000.
I know. Oh, that's so affordable.
But the thing is, though, if it really does what they say it's doing, like, med schools are starting to buy it to have VR, like, you know, cadaver programs and things like that. And if that's what Microsoft wants to do, nobody's even close to that type of technology.
Nope. I mean, hey, Google pretty much gave up on their...
The glass.
Yeah,
that made me so sad.
It looked really cool, but it was still really expensive. Yeah. You're like, okay, I guess we'll never have that.
And hey, with these new things that they're releasing, maybe it'll be just another lease option. So that us plebeians can afford it.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. Like, I would actually do that. Yeah. If I could get a HoloLens, I would do that.
$35 for 14 years.
Yeah. I wouldn't do the 15 years.
This is a second mortgage.
Yeah. $50 a month? Yeah, I might try it out.
The med students can use the HoloLens to remove my kidney.
Yeah, seriously. Or your wife will do it for you. I don't know.
VR is an interesting thing, though, right? Because, I mean, Nintendo doesn't care at all about it. Mm-hmm. They're kind of investing in AR, but not really. And Sony's like VR 100%. Just
$1 billion. I mean, you know? It's paid off. It's a good place to put your eggs.
Yeah, I think, I mean, with Sony, that's a good argument that it's not just a fad, right? Because, I mean, with the advent of 3D TVs, we watch those just totally peter out.
I bought one.
Yeah.
Hey,
I didn't buy it for 3D.
Yeah.
Right.
It happened to have it.
The good 3D TVs had the better 2D screens, yeah. So that's why I bought them.
They were nice TVs. They were the best TVs.
Mine was a floor model.
How many of you guys bought the curved TVs?
Oh, I did not do a curved.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense for a TV, but that's a whole other
argument.
You
can see it from the kitchen!
It's like meant for like projectors. That's the only reason curved exists. But,
oh, man.
Yeah, like that novelty wore off quick. You may have watched, what was that space one with Sandra Bullock once, and you're like, oh, that was cool.
Gravity?
Yeah.
Gravity.
And that's it. You can have an Avatar once in a while.
A very Harold and Kumar 3D
Christmas. Yeah, yeah, no, that's it.
That's a joy.
My point is, it's a handful.
I remember when we first got 4K, it was like, okay, I guess we're going to watch Blue Planet.
Right.
And that was like it.
Right.
That and Blade Runner 2049, right? You gotta get the artsy stuff to tell the difference. But no, PSVR has really taken the industry because it's like a third of the price of anybody else.
The greatest entry level you can get at that price into pretty decent VR.
And your hardware comes in a box instead of you needing to upgrade.
And it works. I have a launch day PS4. And you know what? Oh, wow, I was very concerned. I'm like, this is not going to be able to run it. It's slowed down already. It barely even loads games. It's fine.
Yeah. Wow.
That's impressive.
That's very impressive to me. Yeah. As a person who goes, I bought this 8 years ago almost. Or how long has it PS4 been out now?
5 years.
5 years.
Okay. Yeah, that
long. And we're still able to make this work. Okay.
But that's the thing, right? Like, you can, if you had nothing, you could walk into a store today and for less than about $600, I guess, walk away with full PSVR and a couple of
still
games.
Still $100 more right? than the Vive, and you still need a whole gaming rig.
It's Vive, yeah. man. It's Vive.
Vive. Tomatoes.
But yeah, you still need a PC that can run it, right? And then you have to set up the motion trackers, and it's like this whole thing that the average person doesn't want to deal with. Right.
It costs way more than $500, though. Like, people are like, oh, the Vive is $500. I corrected it for you.
Thank you. But then you need a $1,400 computer.
You forget about the $1,000 computer you need.
Right?
What's like, my total out-of-pocket to put the thing on my face and start VR?
About $100.
It's about, yeah. I think it's about $2,000 to start from nothing to get a Vive up and running. If you had no computer, it could already
run. That makes
run
sense.
It.
No, so you're
talk
right
about $2,000.
That makes sense.
I'm looking at building a new PC right now.
Yeah.
I haven't in a while. And I'm not even in that range with what I'm planning on building. Like, I'm looking at like a $700. But I have a graphics card already, so that's why.
Okay. No. I was going to say,
yeah,
that's a big deal now with graphics cards.
That's the thing. When the graphics cards are $500,
yeah,
you know, that almost doubles your cost.
That's true.
For sure.
Right? There's your $1,200 right there.
Yeah.
You know, that's the real problem is the graphics card right now.
Yeah.
If you want a graphics card for Vive, $500 is the cheap end.
Are you with the Force?
Is the Force with you?
Well, the Force is with us over at the Echo Station Podcast, a new Star Wars series from the Heroes Podcast Network.
Join us in a galaxy not so far away every other Monday as we discuss everything Star Wars from the original films through the whole EU.
So pour yourself some blue milk and get cozy in that tauntaun with the Echo Station Podcast. Find out more at heroespodcast.com.
Hey, it's Derek, co-host of Gamer Heroes and other podcasts on the Heroes Podcast Network. I just wanted to take a moment to tell you about Anthrodesk's Ergo Slant Ergonomic Anti-Fatigue Comfort Floor Mat. During my day job, I am lucky enough to have a standing desk, and while that's helped me get on my feet during the day, it can be uncomfortable to stand for long periods of time. That's where Anthrodesk's Ergo Slant Mat comes in. It's ergonomically designed to help improve posture, reduce back pain, and counter negative effects of heeled shoes. The Ergo Slant provides multiple degrees of cushioning with the top ridge that allows for effective massaging of the instep. Plus, you can reverse the mat to provide an incline or decline. You can find the Anthrodesk Ergo Mat at anthrodesks.com under their accessories. If you use or are interested in a standing desk, you should definitely check out Anthrodesk.
All right, so what else we got, guys? Do any more news you guys want to cover, or should we move on to games we're playing?
I'd say let's talk about some games.
Let's do it. Well, John, we're talking about VR. You want to talk about your VR stuff?
I just want to start by saying, at first, if you guys have listened through us throughout the years, throughout the whole year,
18 months,
I was not on board for PSVR only because I didn't think it could reach the capabilities that it did. And I will say PSVR has made me love my PS4 again.
Aww.
I know, some tears. My Switch for the longest time has been my main go-to now. And I have an Xbox One as well. And that was fun for a while because I was playing like Gears of War and playing things that I used to play all the time. And Halo.
The Microsoft games.
But yeah, they are lacking in exclusives. But so what I've been playing is a lot of VR games lately. And the thing I love about it is they're cheaper because you've already spent $350 on the system. They're cheaper and they're not very long. So I can get through a lot of them very quickly. So one of my favorites right now, and this may not be unpopular opinion, but it's Killing Floor Incursion. It was on Steam. It did okay on Steam, but in VR it's way different. And they actually took a lot of, I think, very smart moves to make it more VR friendly, to really enhance that VR experience. For example, I was telling them earlier, like, when you're shooting a shotgun and it's a pump action, you have to pump the action. To shoot, like, you can't just fire away. You have to actually do that. On a bolt action rifle, you have to pull the bolt back and put it back in. Those are very really different usage of VR. You never really see it used that way.
Do you move around in the space?
This one's free motion. They just did a patch where up until now, VR has done a lot of teleporting. You have to teleport places. That's how they tackle the movement. So they actually did a patch where you just hold the buttons and go like this and you will go that direction.
Oh, that's nice.
And your head controls which way you're going, but by doing this, you'll walk that direction. Mm. So that's really helpful. And that's a very clever way of using motion. Skyrim has done a patch for that as well.
I mean, that is an advantage that the Vive has. Is if you get all the motion controls for the Vive, it's which costs more money. Mm-hmm.
It is much more fluid.
You get more natural movement that way.
So do you have to, if you're going to shoot something, do you have to stop and shoot? You can't move while you're shooting?
It's very hard to do that. It's possible, but it's not very practical. So a lot of times this game is hordes and waves. So a lot of times you end up just sitting in a corner just doing your thing.
Which is kind of what you did in the regular Killing Floor.
Yeah, I mean, although in regular Killing Floor, once you start to get overwhelmed, that's when you're like jumping over cars and stuff.
That's true.
Just run and kill.
You can run, but like honestly, the best thing to do, and this is what I think is really intuitive as well, is you can just, if you run out of ammo, just start swinging. You are actually hitting them.
Punch
them. You actually can take them out. And you can hit them with their own limbs. Like, it is pretty cool.
So you said the game was on Steam? Origin?
Yeah, it is.
Incursion?
Incursion came out, I believe, last 2016 or 2017. So it's actually an older game that they've moved over onto PlayStation's platform. And so I played that. I beat that game. I beat Superhot. I've done a couple other experience games that are a lot of fun. And I'm really excited to play Firewall. It comes out. So when this podcast releases, it'll be yesterday, the 28th. And tomorrow, I get to play it since we're recording today. That's supposed to be like the best experience. That's supposed to be better than Farpoint up until this point because of the way it feels, the way it's been developed. And I'll just give you a quick thing and I'll stop talking. It's more like Rainbow Six in the sense of you're in a small enclosed map. You're playing with players all online, real life players, and it has motion on the movement is on the controller. So you don't have to do some weird stuff. So it's on your gun. You have to buy the moved PlayStation Aim controller. And it is very intuitive. You're leaning over corners. Mm. It's all about tactical. And they've done a lot of things in this game that I think is taking another step. So this is how the game tackles. You have to communicate with your people. If you die, you are allowed to see where everyone is on the map, including enemies. So that encourages you to talk to your teammates, hey, the dude is over here. I thought that was very genius.
Yeah.
That's a very genius way of handling communication. So it's very important. So I'm really pumped to play this game.
I almost feel like you just get a patsy you throw out there.
Yeah, just go die so you can tell us where everybody's at. I feel like that would probably happen. But it's like, it's really clever because, let's be honest, what do we do nowadays? Unless we're playing with our friends, we just mute our mics.
Mm-hmm.
We don't even put our mics on. So this
I don't do a lot of online multiplayer. Overwatch is about it.
This is a game that's like, hey, you want to win? This is how you got to do it.
So you said the Killing Floor game, this one is more like a campaign as opposed to just...
Yeah.
Is it still multiplayer?
It is multiplayer. And that's what's really fun about it is you can go through the missions, the levels, with a friend.
Mm.
So, or you can do a horde mode, which is more like you guys just bunker up and just take it on.
Is it still class based like the old ones were? There were like six classes, like sniper and hunter.
So I haven't played any online yet, so I'm not sure about that. The campaign is very much you get weapons as the levels go.
Gotcha.
So you'll get better weapons, cooler things.
All the classes were in the Killing Floor 1 and 2 were basically like you got bonuses with certain types of weapons and stuff like
that. Yeah, and the only one that mattered was shotgun.
Well, if you went with the melee guy and you got level 6 or whatever, you were unstoppable.
That's true. Yeah, you could get that katana and you're just like chopping just heads off everything. All over the map.
That's
and you
true.
Like gained him life back as you
yep.
The axe isn't bad. I like the axe. In single player campaign, the axe is a good one. It's got a little spot where you can put dual. Can hold it twice and you do harder swings.
Oh,
so it's really, really weird.
Okay.
But if you can do quick ones, or if you do this, you can actually hit harder.
Hmm.
Kill them in one hit.
It's great that Sony finally figured out the motion controls from the Wii.
They upcycled from PlayStation 3. These controllers actually came out when they were doing the move for killing
those silly little colored balls on the end of it.
It works pretty okay.
I know, but like when the Wii came out, everyone was like, man, that looks really silly. And then Sony's like, hang on a second. Yeah.
Hold my controller.
You are right about
and
that.
And 12 years later, we're still using that. So, you know.
I think it was clever. We got a whole warehouse of this shit. What are we going to do with it? Yeah. We're working into our new PSVR.
I almost feel bad for Microsoft because they were the one who came out with something that's like, you don't even need a control, guys. We have this sleek camera. You just stand and be yourself. It's going to be awesome. It's like a total bust.
Yeah. Everyone's like, oh, okay. So everyone just stares at me all day long at the NSA. Like,
yeah, kind of. That's why mine's disconnected.
That's true. It just wasn't as intuitive as they wanted it to be.
No, I remember I had to get a third-party hookup that's basically a fisheye for the Kinect, because when I had my old 360, the room wasn't big enough, so you couldn't stand far enough away from it. So the fisheye allowed you to stand closer and have it work, but it distorted.
Was it like an Xbox monocle?
I mean, kind of. It slid on the side. Seriously, you slid it on the side. It was like a big fisheye lens. And it was like, yeah, it was some third-party thing from like Nikon or
somebody.
It's just
not responsive. You're like doing this, you know, the scrolling thing. It either go way too far or it wouldn't work. And then when it did work, it's like, okay. Well, what are you guys playing? I'm going to start with you.
All right. So I'll lead this off with a question. Have you ever played a game that was so annoying that you had to turn it off?
A game that was so annoying that I had to turn it
off. Quickly.
I don't know.
No, I'm
out. Nothing's coming to mind.
So, speaking of Game Pass, I saw that a new game had been added called Graveyard Keeper. And it initially really appealed to me because it was basically supposed to be Stardew Valley, but in a graveyard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a little more macabre, right? You're not making relationships in the village, at least I think. and there's things like you harvest bodies and you get recipes to make food out of their organs and stuff.
Oh, okay, cannibalism.
Like a hamburger.
Got you.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what it is. So it's funny and it's just got a lot of weirdness to it. So I download it, I start it. It kind of starts you on your graveyard farm. And the problem is that NPCs, which they use pretty heavily initially to do your sort of tutorial, walk you through stuff, don't have voice dialogue, but they, for some reason, decided they need to make a noise. So they just had them make weird noises. Awesome. And so there's this little bouncing skull that is your tutorial guide.
Oh, God.
And as he's talking through the dialogue, he just goes, bop, 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 bop. And then I'm like, okay, so I finally get through this guy. I go down to another place where he sends me, and there's this donkey that I got to talk to. I don't know. He's carrying the body cart. And the donkey goes, honey, 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 honey. I look at my wife, and she just looks at me, and I'm just like, all right, I'll turn it off. That's as far as I got.
That's like Banjo-Kazooie. You remember? They just made noises.
Yeah.
That's like old school stuff.
That's
there.
That's rough, man. Like I've heard not so great reviews of that game. Basically, yeah. it's like Stardew Valley with none of the charm. Yeah.
You know? Pretty much.
That's rough.
Yeah, I want to say the picture I saw of it on Steam was just like, it was like dark Stardew Valley art, and it's just a guy throwing a full body bag into a river.
Yep. Oh. Yep. That's your hopes and dreams of this game.
I'm trying to think about your question here. Like, I'm sure there's got to be something I found that annoying, right? But nothing is coming to mind.
This is the first time I've experienced this.
I feel like games like that would just wipe from my memory anyway.
Right, because you played it for a couple of minutes and that was the end of it. Yeah, nothing really comes to mind for that. I've definitely played some games that were difficult for me to get through, but I felt some sense of, like, pressure to get it done. That were not great. But
I feel like Bomberman for the Switch was kind of one of those games. I'm just like, why is it like this? Why is it so annoying that the computer is that fucking good?
Well, when that game launched, it was broken.
Oh, okay.
And they patched it later, but the controls were all jacked up. And by the time they patched it, we had all kind of stopped playing.
I mean, that's the only one I could think of that annoyed me.
Yeah. Is that the same one that came out on the other consoles?
This was Super Bomberman R.
I think it was a Switch. Almost release day Switch game.
It was a really like good looking Bomberman mm-hmm. game, and the premise was really cool. But yeah, the controls were so spotty. You'd be like, I'm gonna turn down this way, and your character would be like, nope. and you keep going. And in Bomberman, precision's kind of a big deal, you know.
How do you have a good looking Bomberman game? Is it just like the explosions like were 3D? Cool,
well, so okay, so I've been playing Bomberman like as long as I've been gaming. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I have some of the really old Bomberman games where it was sometimes difficult to make out what certain objects were versus like now it's these like cool three-dimensional graphics, but still kind of isometric top down, but it's all very crisp and HD. The bad guys are all, you know, kind of interesting, and there's all these like new items that they have, and everything's very differentiated, you know, that kind of thing. So it just looks sharp, I guess, like in the way that like Mario Kart 8 Deluxe looks really good compared to like the older Mario Kart games, you know, something like that.
We used to play a lot of the older Bomberman mm-hmm. when we were kids, but I haven't played a whole lot. Yeah. Oh, we used to play a ton of it on our DSs.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that was a good time.
Early on in the DS lifetime.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But Super Bomberman for the NES, SNES, is probably my favorite still mm-hmm. to this day. I think it's the best, but the new one looked great. It just, the controls were all jacked up. They added in some cool DLC. There were some third-party characters they even added in. I'm drawing a blank on who they were. Oh, Master Chief.
Oh, that's
you could play as Master Chief.
That's pretty cool.
At one point, which I thought was a really weird tie-in for a Switch exclusive. But hey, whatever works.
Gotta rip our buds out in Microsoft there.
So, I don't know. Maybe they're trying to get Halo 6 on Switch.
Oh my god. The best we get is crossplay on Rocket League.
It would be
or,
cool.
Or Minecraft.
It would be cool if you could get Master Chief in Smash Bros. And like his ultimate involved Cortana, hacking everybody or something.
The fact that they got Solid Snake is weird. So
well, they had a Sony a long time thing, ago. Though. That, yeah, but that was
and from... Sony doesn't even do crossplay.
Not anymore.
I am so excited for Now I'm blanking on the name. It's the first bad guy you run into in Super Metroid.
Oh, Ridley?
Ridley. Yes. I'm so excited to play Ridley.
I'm curious about it. It makes me nervous because the creator of Smash Brothers has always said that it was impossible to scale it right.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they finally are doing it makes me worry if he was just pressured into doing it or if he found out how to do it. Right?
Almost like it's either, certainly.
You know? Right? Like, so did he just figure it out and it's going to be amazing? Or that you have to do it and it's not going to be very good?
That was like one of the first. So when I had a Wii U, I still do, but when I was playing Smash Brothers for the Wii U, I decided to get a Samus amiibo, and that was like the first one that I'd ever had. The only other one I ever got was Donkey Kong, and I just never really cared about him that much. But then when I saw Ridley, I was like, man, I'm gonna buy that one. I cannot wait for that one to come out.
I have a very sad collection of amiibo.
Sad as in a lot, or sad as
I have a lot of them. I have a lot of them because they unlock little things that are like totally irrelevant. But the reason I bought a bunch of them though was for the Wii U Smash Bros. If you use the amiibo to play that version of the PC, it was tougher to beat, and it learned your behavior as it leveled up the amiibo. So like when you get good enough at Smash Brothers, like the normal AI is kind of boring. It's pretty easy to kind of guess what it's going to do. The amiibo are not like that. And so that was pretty cool, because that meant that I had like, these were just a bigger challenge to play against.
It actually expanded the game for you.
Yeah. So that's cool. That a lot.
I like that too. That was the reason that I bought them in the first place. My only problem with the Wii U is that I didn't know anybody that owned a Wii U. So it was
I think it was just you and me.
Just these two guys.
Only about 14 million other people. Which is not a lot.
I think it's only 12.
No, it's pretty small.
12?
Because I think the GameCube was... Because GameCube was higher.
Yeah.
I think it's only like 12 and a half.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. But the Wii U is an underrated console.
Oh my god.
Is it?
I have more games for my Wii U than my PS4 and Xbox One put together.
That is crazy.
Are you counting your
Is that like all the games released for the Wii U?
Right. You're counting your God, what's your retro?
My what?
What are they
the
called?
Virtual console?
Thank you.
I am not counting
I could not get virtual
console. I'm counting boxed games.
Okay.
That came with discs.
I thought you were inflating your numbers there.
No.
The virtual console, they stole so much money from me on that thing. Like,
how many times have I bought Super Mario World?
Yeah. Like, Do I have a free ROM of this upstairs on my PC? Yeah, better buy it for $10 on the Wii U.
You'll be doing that on your Switch here soon, too.
I have a Super Nintendo that still works. I still bought it on my 3DS eShop and my Wii eShop, just for good measure.
I'm just saying, if they get Duke Nukem, like, as of on the virtual console for my Switch, I'm getting it.
Well, virtual console's not happening on Switch, man.
I'm talking about, yes, it will.
It's not happening.
When they get an N64 one going, game happening. Over.
It's not happening.
You guys have all my money.
It's not happening. What else you been playing, John?
At the recommendation of Thomas, I think I talked about a little bit about this earlier. I've been playing Hitman.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the thing that sold me was he said, you know, the first of six maps they released is like one of the biggest single pieces of content I've ever seen. There's just so much to do. And I was like, wow, that sounds really impressive. So I went and downloaded it because it was free. And, so they had basically released over their 2 years, they released five DLCs or something that were all free for the people who bought the base game. And the first map, the one that came with it originally, has anyone else played it?
No.
The Hitman? Okay. So you know the premise of the game.
Yeah. Oh,
you're
yeah.
a hitman. You kill people.
I played the PS3 one. Okay. I haven't played really for a really long time.
Yeah.
It's been a long time.
Something like Metal Gear Solid. I've played, not really my cup of tea. But it's kind of a similar difficulty, but it has you replaying missions and increasing the difficulty sort of incrementally in Hitman, which makes it, I think, a little less frustrating. Once you figure something out once, it's just sort of, you know, it might say the first mission to kill one target. The second mission is to kill two targets.
Right.
The first one is one of them. Third mission is kill the two targets, but you have to do it with the piano wire instead of with any weapon.
But the candlestick in the library.
I mean, you kind of, yeah, it just turns into a clip. But it's just impressively massive. And there's a bunch of little side stories and things. Every room you walk into has something going on that's part of another mission. And there's different things you can use to participate or take part in or not as you choose to help with your mission that you're doing right now. And then, of course, like I said, they released. So the first one's in Paris. It's like this big fashion show at this mansion.
Oh, that's cool.
And, you know, I've seen a screenshot of it. I haven't figured out how to do it, but you can like drop the lights on the fashion stage to kill people.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. it's not just, you know, stabbing someone in the back or shooting them with a silenced gun. There's environmental ways to kill people.
That's cool.
I have a mission right now that says that someone has to die via accident. And I haven't figured out how to do it yet.
There you go. So you're going to knock the lights down.
Yeah,
apparently.
I mean, or you can, like, adjust the outdoor space heaters to, like, blow up. You can push people off ledges. I mean, there's just all sorts of ways. Anyway, massive game. And I guess they announced another one coming out probably next year. And that game is going to actually include all of the content from this one.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah, and Thomas said that he was really excited about that because I guess they had changed developers or something?
Basically,
it
got relicensed or somebody else picked it up.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
But they were worried that they weren't going to have the other stuff. But
interesting.
Something that Thomas was telling us about that I had no idea. I mean, I haven't really played any of the Hitman games, but when he was talking about how, like, the community can make challenges for other players and stuff, which is
that's really
pretty cool.
Yeah. It's, I haven't seen it yet, but there's ways to basically, if you do something cool, you can throw it online. It's called a contract, and someone else can sign up to try and recreate it.
Mm-hmm.
That's
way
to
challenge
cool.
your friends.
And it's just called Hitman. It's not another.
It's just Hitman.
Okay.
Yeah. So
you know they have like nine of them or something
like
that.
They had all sorts of Hitman. I think the one a few years back was Codename 47.
Something like that.
Anyway. Yeah, this one's just called Hitman. And you'll see that if you go try to find it, there's basically like five or six content packs for it.
I will try it. I'm very interested in that.
It's pretty cool.
It's right up my wheelhouse.
Nice. So. Mike, you been playing anything?
So, now that I have a Switch, I finally decided to try Hollow Knight.
Oh, yeah?
So, I love it. but I also, I grew up with just loving the Metroid series. So, the kind of Metroid Castlevania type games are pretty up my alley. But I really do enjoy, I have a love-hate relationship with its similarities to Dark Souls as well.
The difficulty, you mean?
Yeah, like...
Oh, man.
it is hard. I think the hardest thing about it is that just like Dark Souls, when you die, you drop all of the stuff that you've gathered. Mm-hmm. So that's then you have to run back and go get your spirit, and then that at times can be pretty frustrating. But at the same time, if you're too afraid to adventure out, then you're not progressing in the game. So it kind of forces you to get over it and move forward. So I've had a lot of fun with it. I love the dialogue. I love all the characters. At first, I thought it was a little weird. The art style, I didn't mind it, but some of it seemed a little bit too drawn for me.
Okay.
But I don't know. I definitely grew on me, and I love it now. So, and I playing with the Switch is just, it has changed my life. Like being able to have those two Joy-Cons and just totally lounge out on the couch. Mm-hmm.
Do you play disconnected?
Oh yeah. Oh, I do. I've got like pillows all around me. Like,
you're crazy. I'm not venturing into that.
When I'm home, I use the Pro Controller.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But like on an airplane, I'll set it up in tabletop on the thing. I'll have the Joy-Con below me separated.
Yep.
I don't think I could ever play like a first person shooter or something that way. But something like a 2D game like that.
Yeah. I found that works. I played Super Mario Odyssey pretty much. You know, exclusively.
You can do more, though.
Yeah, it really
works. Yeah, you can do more with Cappy, though. Odyssey. And we didn't know that, because we were... Well,
I knew that.
No, on the moon, the map where the moon is, like, way up there in the water... Not the water one, the pyramid one?
Yeah, mm-hmm. With the Sphinx.
Way up there, and it's like, how do you get that?
With a Pro Controller. Show me how to do it with a Pro Controller. All right? Look, man, I've been a Nintendo guy my entire life. I camped out for the Wii. Motion controls are still a little annoying to me. Right?
Fair enough.
As much as I've really tried. How is Hollow Knight in handheld mode?
Okay. It's still good. I think that I just don't really like handheld mode that much, period. And I had the same gripe with the Wii U, because like when you had the Wii U and you could have like somebody watching TV or whatever and flip over to your gamepad. It works for a little while, but I get cramps in my hands, and it gets really uncomfortable, and I still don't think that that's for me. I mean, maybe, I definitely would do it if, like, I have it out somewhere, or, like, I'm on a road trip or something, but if I'm at home, I'm gonna dock it, for sure.
Now, the Switch actually bothers my carpal tunnel. My DS does not, and the Wii U gamepad didn't either, because it was thicker.
Yeah.
But the Switch bothers my carpal tunnel in handheld mode.
I think it's because the ergonomics are flat on the back. Like, now, if they had some kind of bump that gives you a little cushion.
And there's
there,
a couple cases online I'm looking at, but I want to feel them before I drop $15 on one of these things, but...
That's what it is for me, too. Yeah. It's flat, so I'm playing like this,
But then it won't fit in the case that I got to travel with if I put the grip on, so... Right.
The problem is, if I'm going to play that way at my house, it's because I'm laying down in bed, right? So I'm laying down in bed, and I'm holding it above me.
Same here.
And my arms are in pain. Now I've got to readjust. I always end... My ending pose is, like, leaning it on my chest and, like, barely holding it. But then, like, my neck hurts, and there's good way to do it.
You need an arm attached to your wall that clamps onto the tablet, so that way you get your arms to be at your side with the Joy-Con. Just look up.
He knows what's up.
Then I don't need VR.
There you go.
Same thing.
Fantastic. I've been playing Persona 5 at the request of a buddy of mine who bought it for me. It's not a game I would normally play. I've never played a Persona game. I do not play JRPGs very often. In fact, I can't even think of one off the top of my head that I've completed. I am about 3 hours into it.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right.
Really? Because everyone raves about it.
The art style is beautiful. Like,
he even got his own anime based on it.
It's a great looking game. It's a great looking game. But here's my problem, okay? And this was the problem at the beginning of Horizon Zero Dawn, too. But when I'm playing a video game, I want to play the video game. If all I'm doing is running 5 feet to the next cutscene to then read text, because there also aren't voice actors through the entire thing... I'm really just reading. And if I want to read, I have my Kindle for that, and I can go and read. Okay, but I want to play a video game, and that means interacting with it. And the first 2 or 3 hours of this game are almost 80%, maybe even higher, of just, cutscenes and dialogue, and some of it's voiced and some of it's not voiced, and it's just difficult to, like, get into a rhythm, you know? And then the fights are all turn-based, and, like, they're not... particularly interesting. They're a little boring. So, like, when you go, like, I'm going to run 5 feet, and then you have to stop because there's a cutscene, and then you run 5 more feet, and then stop for another cutscene, and then you run, and there's a fight, but then that's turn-based, so you have to keep stopping, too.
Right.
It just feels very slow.
I mean, it sounds like a lot of JRPGs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's just not really my kind of game. You know, I grew up with North America titles for the most part, and I grew up with, you know, the Mario games, and later on, you know, GoldenEye and Halo and Gears and that type of stuff. Yeah, I like action-oriented games. Mm-hmm. Even platformers and open world stuff, Breath of the Wild, Mario Odyssey are wonderful games, two of my favorites of all time. But you're doing stuff. Mm-hmm. You're always doing stuff.
That's a fair point. That's a good totally can agree with you on that.
And it's not like in Diablo, there's these amazing cutscenes with this incredible, you know, CGI, but that's the story.
And they don't kill you with those, though.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I feel like they're far in between.
It's like two per act or
right.
something.
Like,
really.
It's like
right. It like chapters
far.
It out. You know, but it's not like you said two sentences, I run 5 feet, and then you say two more sentences.
Yeah. Diablo's packed with action anyway. You're like ready for a break.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, it's a reward.
Yeah.
Right. It's a
reward.
Go get a drink.
I feel like the game that can like really get heavy on the cutscenes, but it's perfectly okay is The Last of Us, because that's like that's like you're playing a movie, you know, and it's like whenever a cutscene starts, it's like, yes, like I will gladly sit here and watch this.
But I think that works because when you are playing, there's so much that you're doing.
Mm-hmm. Right?
There's
stressful.
So many actions
it's hard,
to take.
Yeah.
It's stressful.
Yeah, it's a high stress game. Like, I mean, because that's definitely one of my favorite games too. But there's just so much you're doing, right? Everything's action-oriented. You're always moving and doing things. Mm-hmm. You know, I get to move this board so I can cross this way, or I have to hide here and keep track of where everybody is. But like in Persona, you're not doing much. Like, the most interesting thing they had me do is when I showed up to school for the first day, I had to find the faculty office. Well, that took me 5 minutes because all the rooms are in Japanese. You know, so like I'm going up here like, nope, I'm not supposed to go that way because it tells you to go back down to this floor. I'm like, okay, I picked the right door by accident, right? Like, that's as far as the action gets, like, that's not going to keep my attention very long. And Horizon Zero Dawn had a lot of that early on because of all the exposition they're trying to get you. But around the 5 hour mark, the game opens up.
Just get through that first 5 hours.
I liked it. Horizon Zero Dawn, I loved those. I thought the story was awesome. I thought it was fun to watch. I didn't mind it at all.
I didn't mind it after the first 5 hours. Mm. Like, by the end of the game, it had all justified itself at that point, and I have a very positive feeling on it. But early on, it just felt like, when do I get to play?
Mm-hmm.
When are you going to stop telling me the game and let me play the game? Right? And Persona, the whole thing is just, it's almost like an interactive novel in a way that happens to have turn-based fighting sometimes. And, you know, some of this is the anime style, you know, of JRPGs, is that everything's very heavy-handed, right? So I'm not going to spoil anything of the game, I'm only 3 hours in, right? But the character you play as is like this delinquent kid because he assaulted a guy when he was trying to stop that guy from assaulting a woman. So because you socked this businessman in the face because he was sexually assaulting a woman, you're the bad guy, right? So you get kicked out of your school, you have a new school, everybody hates you. And it's just every time someone passes you in the hallway, it's like, it's that kid who got kicked out of his school, or that's the new transfer student we're supposed to stay away from. And yeah, but you already showed me what I did wrong, and I would have done the same thing. So
yeah,
like, it's kind of annoying.
That sounds like a JRPG.
Who wants to replay getting ridiculed in high school? Right?
I mean, that's not what I was thinking. I was like, oh boy. Like Final Fantasy, you know, at least you're in these big grand, you know.
That's fair.
Yeah, I finished that game already. I want to do that.
Oh, man.
So you'll see it through.
I didn't say that. I didn't say that.
I am trying to give you the benefit.
So my buddy Brian bought it for me because he loves the game. He spent like 80 hours on this game.
Wow.
The last game I spent 80 hours on was Breath of the Wild. And it's one of my favorite games of all time.
And that makes sense.
Okay.
The game is huge.
The next game after that I spent that kind of time on?
Skyrim for me, for sure.
Oblivion.
Actually, oh, well, Oblivion. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, Elder Scrolls.
So like, that's the thing. Like, we're talking about massive, massive games that I happen to love or and are in my top lists. I'm not going to play 80 hours of a game that I'm not that into. I'm going to give it more time. 3 hours is, I don't think, a fair amount for such a large story. I don't know that
but
I can
But you don't
make
see
it.
Breath of the Wild status.
I don't know that I can make it.
Fair enough.
So,
yeah, I think that whole conversation about how the narrative can pull you out of your character and whatnot is exactly why things like games like Half-Life have really did it right. Basically, I don't know if you've played Half-Life, but...
I own the first two.
We have a host that really raves about it all the time, yeah. Every time, Ryan. And,
yeah, like, he listens to the show.
I bought them, and I want to play them, because he's talked about it so much.
Yeah. So, basically, instead of doing a cutscene or anything, it's a first-person shooter, so it can kind of do this better, but... It just has your character experience things. It's more like real-time events. And for the most part, the scripted events, you still have control of your character. And you still have to run through whatever's happening or interact with something, whatever, solve the puzzle, whatever it is.
Well, Halo does that, too.
Yeah, same idea.
It's probably just like that,
But, of course, you have a voiceless character, so you're just kind of imagining your side of it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think that it does a really good job of just keeping it in the game and still telling a story.
They did a really good job of, like, for all of those scenes, they kind of made everything feel rushed. Like, everything, you know, like, if you're talking to somebody, it's because you've just entered this hideout and you've got to really quickly hear what their plan is, and then they got to push you out the door so that you can go save the world, you know?
That's cool.
So it's like... I never really felt playing Half-Life that I needed to talk. It was more like just like people handing me stuff and being like, now go.
Yeah,
you're like, okay, I will.
It really is. Like, it's almost like the scripted cutscene events are more chaotic than the game.
Because
you get to pause places in the game where you've beaten all the enemies in an area, so it's not spawning more, but you can't figure out the puzzle. And so you're just like wandering around this empty area. You're like, so that's kind of slow, right? And then you like finally get over and get to the next event, and it's just like rush.
What was the map with all the head crabs?
Well, there was the head crab king, where you had to use the later in Half-Life 2. Yeah. Well, even yeah, I don't know the part near the end where you have all the striders, the walkers that you're killing plaza, and it's just all these things happening at once, and you got to take down these big mech machines, rocket launchers, whatever. That's all a big scripted event, and it's like, but it's telling story through that, but you're still playing the game.
Right. Some games don't do it well. Like, Wolfenstein and Doom have the thing where all the exposition's happening around you, and if you walk away from those characters, they get quieter as you get farther away, and you'll miss it. So I find myself, like, just standing there, like, looking around while this person's talking, because, like, it might be important, you know, so I don't want to leave.
I feel like that's a Bethesda thing, because you do that in Skyrim, too. You're just like, all right, I don't really want to listen to this guy talk anymore. We get it. You just walk away.
I mean, that's kind of like real life, though. You don't want to be the guy just, like, walking away, like, no, I'm going to go look at this cool archway over here.
I don't
want to
ask you questions. Don't make me ask you questions.
Like, Doom is such a fast-paced, intense game, and then, like, you get to, like, a hologram that's about to tell you something. Like, well... why would they put it there if I'm not supposed to hear what it has to say? So you stand there for like a minute and a half while it's talking, and it's just like introducing this like part of the map that doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it's just flavor.
It's like talking about
the subway system or something.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. The beautiful subways here on, you know, whatever. Anyway. All right. Well, anything else you guys want to touch on today?
I want to hear his question, or was that your question?
That was my question.
Okay. From the beginning, you foreshadowed a question.
Oh, my question. Okay,
yeah, that's so the question.
This is our question to our listeners, and we're going to ask this on our Facebook, and we're going to throw it on our, you know, on our Twitter and whatnot to get responses there. But feel free to, you know, if you think you have a funny response worthy of some airtime, please hit us up. Let us know what you think. I think our question this week is, if you could be a Pokemon, who would you be and why?
Is this a Pokemon that already exists, or
an existing Pokemon?
There's like 800 Pokemon.
There are no Pokemon that don't exist.
Until the next generation. Yeah.
So, for example, I would say like Meowth. Because I want to, you know, generate some sweet cash for myself.
All right. That's cool.
Yeah.
Anybody else want to throw one out? I have no idea.
I've never given that thought, man. So I have no idea.
I mean, I feel like I don't have any funny responses because I just want to be Zapdos all the time,
He's
no matter
cool.
what.
Yeah. legendary.
Yeah, right. Just flying through this air, just like shooting lightning bolts at everything.
See, I'm the lame guy who's like, Mewtwo sounds cool.
How is Mewtwo lame?
Right? Well, like, you don't ever have to touch anything. Mewtwo's not a lame answer. Exactly.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Because it's Mewtwo. Everybody, right? Like, of the first generation, Mewtwo is like the god.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to be Superman.
If we were, exactly. If we were 8 years old, we'd all be Mewtwo.
Right, exactly. We'd all be yelling at each other because we can't all be Mewtwo.
I have a funny Mewtwo story. Okay. So,
weird.
When I was a kid, I want to say I was in seventh grade, really into Pokemon cards. I had just opened a Venusaur, and I just started playing, just started collecting cards. I didn't really know that much about all of them because obviously I hadn't collected every single one. And a buddy of mine that I went to school with, spoiler alert, total dick. he was like, "You have a Venusaur?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "I know, man. I will trade you my Mewtwo card for your Venusaur." And I'm like, are you kidding me? Because, I mean, come on, the Mewtwo card.
I'm getting the good end of this deal.
It has to be the best card in the game. I trade him the card. He doesn't even let me see it first. I should have caught on at that point. I trade him the card, and I look at the stats and everything. And I'm like, no, I need that card back. And he's like, you made the trade already. Sorry.
Oh, my God.
And he kept that card, and I never got it back.
I did some bad trades, too. Don't feel bad.
So, in eighth grade, I bought a box of Pokemon cards from a friend of mine for $120 in eighth grade.
Wow, that's packs, serious.
That was, like, money. All my so money.
Like your life savings, yeah.
And I put it in my locker, because in eighth grade we had lockers, and somebody broke into my locker and stole just the cards. So somebody who knew it went down.
Yeah, I was going to say, clearly the guy you
somebody who knew it went down went in there, broke into my locker, and stole everything.
Would be
Was there any good ones in there?
Yeah, he had, like, the reality was he wasn't ripping me off.
Oh, I mean, he was, because he stole them back.
I don't know that it was him.
Yeah, we know it was him.
I think
simple deduction skills says
there were other people around. There were worse kids than him.
Who
in that
was
class,
desperate
man,
enough for the cards, Derek?
That was literally the reason that I stopped playing the game. So John and I, when we were kids, used to go to Toys R Us every Saturday because they had Pokemon League.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
So we'd go there and they had like this whole thing organized where you had gym leaders and you could literally play the gym leaders at Toys R Us for badges.
That's cool.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. It was really cool. Well, I took my just most prized possession deck there. I had, like, my Charizard in it. It had, like, all of my really, really nice cards. I had one of my, like, nice holofoil Japanese cards in it. And I got up from the table, sat back down, and it was gone. And I was so heartbroken that deck was gone. I never played the game again. I just stopped right there.
I mean, that'll scar a kid.
That's why I stopped playing the X-Wing Miniatures game. I had sunk about $300 into that game. And the company I was working at moved locations, and it was lost in the move.
What?
Yeah.
What a convenient move.
Oh, my gosh.
That's so shitty.
Yeah. So my little brother felt really bad for me and bought me the starter set, but I just couldn't bring myself
To
do it again.
No, nobody wants to restart.
The worst part was, it was like not even 2 months earlier, I sold the Star Trek Attack Wing version of the game because it wasn't as good as the X-Wing one, and I sold it. And if I had just kept it, I at least would have had one of the two games to play.
Now, was this before or after Armada came out?
This was before Armada.
Oh, well, at least you didn't get that disappointment.
We used to play tournaments, though, at work, and I had actually won a couple of them. Like, I had really loved that game, and so somebody took the whole set.
Who lost in those games? I'm kidding.
Derek, you have some bad luck with people taking your stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, you learn. Never had the same thing stolen twice.
Never buy it again. Right. So.
All right, well, we are over our normal time here, so we should probably call it a day. We've never closed out this way before because this is the new Gamer Heroes moving forward. So, how do you guys want to close out the show?
Well, I would say thank you to Derek and John for giving us this opportunity. We're really excited. I can speak for Josh and Thomas too. We're all really pumped to take the show forward. We will, you know, we'll see you next week, I believe, with episode 61.
Nice.
I guess I would just say to all our listeners, I'm not stuck in here with you. You're stuck in here with me.
Nice. Sorry. Gotta do a Watchmen quote. Now hit me in the face with a tray.
I'm excited for you guys to take this over and see what you do with it. I listened to you guys did a couple of test episodes, and they were fun. You guys have a really good dynamic. So this should be really good. I'm looking forward to it. I don't have anything quippy to say.
Yeah. I'll be listening. Yeah. That's my quip.
Yeah, I didn't prepare anything quippy either, but thank you again. This is going to be a cool opportunity. We're super excited. I know when we first started doing a couple of like our test recordings just to make sure we understood the equipment and everything, I know everybody was really nervous about it, but we were like pumped every single time we finished it. So we're excited to do this.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, we are Gamer Heroes on the Heroes Podcast Network. You can find us at Heroes Podcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, or heroespodcasts.com. The show is available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Blog Talk Radio, and anywhere else that you can plug in an RSS feed. Who wants to plug GGKC, where they can find you guys?
We are very easily available at gg-kc.com. From there, you can find our Twitter, Facebook, anything else.
Awesome. And John is with Buster Props.
Yeah, I'm actually repping them today, right now, as we speak. Yeah, if you guys want something cool made, something from a video game, come hit us up, Buster Props. You'll find us on Facebook and Instagram, heavily on Instagram. Awesome. So.
Nice. Yeah, you're making me a muscle kit for a couple cosplays.
He's going to do some secret cosplays. We got to give him some fake muscles.
It'll be good. Yeah, and I am the Star Trek dude, so you can find me on Twitter there for that, other shows on the network as well. We'll catch you guys next week.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Game on.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.